Welcome to The Wrap-Up, a weekly podcast that gives you an insider's look at the top stories in Hollywood. I'm your host, Sharon Waxman, the founder and editor-in-chief of The Wrap, and joining me is my co-host, Daniel Goldblatt, assistant managing editor. Daniel, welcome back from vacation.
Thank you. I had a great time back in Queens. I did White Castle. I went to the Nathan's in Coney Island. That's Brooklyn. I went to an old school Italian place that my grandparents used to go to. I had a very relaxing and like comfort foodie trip home. It was great.
That's great. Well, while you were gone, you missed a crap ton of news, but we're going to get to that in a minute. But first, let me let you guys know that I got to interview Hannah Waddingham, who's the actress who plays the delightfully bitchy owner of the AC Richmond Soccer Club on Ted Lasso, which is airing its second season on Apple Plus. You will get to find out if she really eats those biscuits that Jason Sudeikis makes for her every day.
I can't wait. But first, Sharon, let's get into headlines. You know, I had a great week off, but I did not have as good of a week as Reese Witherspoon.
No.
Did anyone have a better week than Reese Witherspoon? On Monday, it was announced that her production company, Hello Sunshine, was being sold to a media company recently launched by former Disney executives Kevin Mayer and Tom Staggs and backed by Blackstone. The sale price, $900 million. And Forbes estimated that Reese will pocket about $120 million from the deal. Is Hello Sunshine actually worth that much? It depends who you ask. And Sharon, I know you did a lot of the asking this week. What are some of the answers you heard, and where do you land on this deal?
Well, it's a very, very interesting deal. First off, we talked to Kevin Mayer and Tom Staggs the day that the deal was announced, and they feel very confident that this $900 million valuation is solid and backed up. Also, they're very, you know, insistent that Reese Witherspoon's company, Hello Sunshine, is not just a production company. They're calling it a multimedia future-proof model for where the industry is headed. And by that, they mean, yes, they're doing production and, you know, what's the name of the show?
They've got Little Fires Everywhere.
They
got Little Fires Everywhere, Big Little Lies, The Morning Show.
Between the Big Little Lies and the Little Fires Everywhere, it's like Little Big Fires Everywhere, you know, is really should just be one big show. But those are their shows, but they produce them. They don't own them, right? So that's a lot of where the questioning came from. They don't have a library. But Reese does have this book club that is hugely successful. It's got 2.5 million subscribers. That is a real base from which to build other lines of business, whether it's e-commerce, merchandising, or just to feed them other content that Reese and her company, which, by the way, is an all-female-led set of executives, which is really exciting, as they make things going forward. So not only did the deal value the company at $900 million, which is not to say that anybody wrote a check for that amount, but Blackstone, which is the PE partner of Kevin and Tom, they wrote a check apparently of about $500 million to invest in this deal and to take out AT&T and other shareholders, and then also committed another $2.5 billion in production. So that IP, in other words, intellectual property that's being developed out of Reese's book club, could be made into content going forward that they would own, even though they don't own any of the pieces that Reese Witherspoon has produced up to now. So there's different elements to it, and they make a fairly convincing case. But at the same time, there were a ton of naysayers when we went out into the community and started talking to deal executives and deal makers and lawyers. And there were a lot of people who thought that this does not make sense, that it's a very high valuation. What happens if Reese doesn't show the kind of dedication to the company and decides to instead she'd rather spend more time on her kids, not now, but in 5 years or in 10 years, what happens to the future plans, the projection of the company at that time. It also suggests that, to me, if I just do rough math, if the company's getting a 12, 13 times multiple, for those of you who are not in finance, it's just saying that you take the profit of the company and the value is tied to how many times turns you give to that profit, would be about 12 times profit. It's very hard to imagine the company is doing $80 million in profit a year. So there were people who were very skeptical, and many of them are veteran deal makers. But I do think it's a landmark deal. I think it's going to set the bar for other similar deals with other production companies that do or don't have a library, but do have cash flow from the things that they did produce, even if they don't own it. And so those companies that we talked about in stories that we've written on our pro service, which I recommend everybody go read on rappro.com, it suggests that companies like Brian Grazer and Ron Howard's Imagine Entertainment or Kevin LeBron's company, that they are going to get these very high valuations right now. Go ahead.
Sure. No, I was going to say, I think you made a good point with Reese's involvement, because this felt very much like they just want to get in the Reese Witherspoon business. It felt very similar to like Gwyneth Paltrow has Goop and Oprah has O. You're getting the face of that company. And even when they spoke about it, they
Honest
talked
company,
a lot of
Jessica Alba. Right.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. They talked a lot about the connection with consumers and the power of being an influencer. I think they appreciate that Reese has this built this community, and that's what they're investing in. I think that's what they're counting on. And it's not a bad
place
to be.
That's exactly right. And
Reese has made a good choice.
Well, I think that's actually a good bet. Reese is solid. Yeah. And if you saw her on CNBC, I thought it was so impressive to see her. We've just invited her to our grill conference, which is where we talk about these things and sort of, you know, come at them from all different angles. And we're hoping that we're going to get her to show up with Sarah Harden, her CEO. Kevin Mayer and Tom Staggs also happen to be coming to the grill, which is happening in September. It's all part of the Wrap Pro service, which is really where the insider conversations happen in Hollywood. So I actually think that is validation of that high valuation, what you're referring to, this idea. Does she really have an authentic connection? I think there's no doubt that she does. The question is, what else will people turn to Reese for? They're not going to buy all their groceries from Hello Sunshine. And you're not going to make a $1 billion company out of everybody getting a book a month, even if it's 2 million people. So a lot of other development has to happen. And it does depend a lot on those users, that community, continuing to feel that they have an authentic connection to her. I think that's a very good point.
Yeah, I agree. Okay. I think it'll be very interesting.
It'll be very interesting. So turning to Jeopardy. Jeopardy is close to naming its new permanent host, which is going to be, it's been a very long and drawn out process, but it appears that it's going to be the show's executive producer, Mike Richards. Nothing, however, is official yet, although it has been out on the Wrap, so that's pretty close. But a source did tell the Wrap that they're talking to other potential hosts. The reaction online to Mike Richards potentially getting this gig was not that great. There are an awful lot of people out there who are still clinging to the idea that LeVar Burton should get the gig. Daniel, what do you think about having Mike Richards hire himself?
Yeah, he's the executive producer of the show. He certainly had a leg up from the beginning. Yeah. First of all, the LeVar Burton fans, he wasn't that great. He just wasn't. Right. He seemed a little awkward. He seemed a little nervous. He got a little lost in the flow of things. He wasn't as comfortable as some of the other hosts have been. And Mike Richards was legitimately very good. Was he my favorite? No. Was he top two
Who's
or
your
three?
Favorite?
I thought Buzzy was the best. He was a former champion. He did the Tournament of Champions when he hosted. I thought he was very good. He was very fun. And he also, you know, I like hosts who have some awareness of also what's going on beyond just, yes, that's right, yes, that's wrong.
Yeah.
People who can feel what's happening in the game, who knows when someone's pulling ahead or is up by enough. Just, you know, a little bit more than just yes, no, right, wrong, read questions, move on. But Mike was very good.
I was like, more positive than negative. I mean, I wouldn't say it was like wildly passionate. But.
Yeah, I think he was solid. He was fine. Right. And I think that, you know, some of the other hosts that were really good probably were never really full-time options. Is Anderson Cooper going to find time in his busy schedule to do this? Joe Buck, Robin Roberts, these are people that are pretty busy to begin with. So I think it was always going to be someone who, you know, had to have the time. But he's as good as anyone else was. I think he was a little better than Ken Jennings was. And I think, you know, some people who I read thought that Ken Jennings might have just overshadowed all of the competitors too much, being the greatest Jeopardy contestant of all time. So I think Richards is a solid choice. And, you know, maybe the process was a little weird. If you actually also check on the Wrap and we did a, our Tony Maglio TV editor has been keeping track of the ratings, and this guest host thing has been sort of dwindling in the ratings as, right. as the weeks have gone on. So the sort of appeal of the nature of just, ooh, who's going to be the guest host this week, that appeal's kind of gone. So it's time, I think, to move on. And so I think Richards is as good a choice of any, personally.
Mm-hmm. Well, there, people, you have it. Richards is as good a choice as any.
Yeah, I think he'll do just fine. Yep. All right, finally this week, the fallout from Scarlett Johansson's lawsuit against Disney is still being felt all over Hollywood. Let's get right to this. Sharon, you wrote a piece this week detailing perhaps the biggest cause of all of this, which is the rift between Disney executive chairman Bob Iger and CEO Bob Chapek. Explain to our listeners just how that relationship, or should I say maybe lack thereof, led to this whole mess that Disney finds itself in.
Well, the issue that my piece brought up is that there's been this estrangement between Bob Iger and Bob Chapek, even though Disney denies it. They sent me a statement twice telling me that I was completely wrong. Whereas since the piece came out, everybody and their uncle has come to me and said, you're completely right. But basically, there has been this estrangement that really dates back to the beginning of the pandemic when Bob Chapek had only been in the job for a few months. And then the pandemic kicked in, you know, in earnest, and everything had to shut down, and Disneyland had to shut down. And it was really quite a crisis for Disney among, you know, all the other companies that had to deal with it, but certainly a live entertainment company, all of that had to shut down. And Bob Iger gave an interview to the New York Times early on in which he said he was stepping back in to help guide the company through it. Bob Chapek did not like that. He was blindsided by that. And so by all accounts, that's where the estrangement began. And what happens when you have the two senior executives, one of whom has been running the place for a couple of decades, the other that has a lot to learn, Bob Chapek coming from theme parks and not having the experience that most people would think is requisite it with talent relationships, with stories and how to handle those, that he needed the guidance and support of Bob Iger to start learning the ropes if he was going to be, if he is to be a successful CEO. So there's a couple of ways you could read this. I mean, for sure, the two of them were not talking very much. When the Scarlett Johansson problem arose, the problem being that Scarlett Johansson is a profit participant on Black Widow. She's the main character and a big reason why that franchise works or doesn't work. She gets a salary, but she gets a big piece of the back end. When that doesn't open in theaters, or when there is a smaller opening in theaters due to COVID and due to the fact that it's being streamed on Disney Plus, that materially impacts her ability to make money. And her lawyer said, Disney's got to figure that out. Disney's got to make it right. We have a contractual obligation that this is released exclusively in theaters, and you can claim COVID or whatever you want. And Disney apparently did not respond. That's according to the lawsuit. Hard to believe, very hard to believe. But what was really amazing was that not only did Scarlett Johansson end up suing Disney, which my sources say Iger was mortified by, because he really prides himself on his relationships with talent and just smoothing through just exactly these kinds of things. But then after she filed the lawsuit, Disney issued a statement which floored a lot of us, calling Scarlett Johansson callous for filing a lawsuit during a time of COVID and calling out her actual salary of $20 million and essentially saying she was greedy and you made a lot of money and that, you know, you should be happy with that. That is literally the kind of thing that Bob Iger would like turn green and fall over in his chair if, you know, if he knew about that. It's one of two things. He either let Bob Chapek hang himself because he knew, I'm sure he knew that this was not the proper way to respond, or he didn't know about it because they're so disconnected. And so the point of my piece was just that this is what happens when you have rifts at the very highest leadership of the company. It has consequences. And this is, you know, a pretty bad example. Disney has a huge PR problem right now. It has they have to deal with going to war with Brian Lourd, who's Scarlett's agent at CAA, and anybody else who Brian Lourd represents. And by the way, pretty much anybody else who might want to be working with Disney. So yes, my piece was about rifts have consequences, and I haven't heard anybody really tell me that it's wrong.
Yeah, you made a great point. This is terrible PR. This reminds me a lot in sports where teams will go out of their way to treat older players well so that they send a message to the other players in the league. Hey, we treat our guys well. Right. And you got to, and not to get too specific, but the Boston Celtics are known to be able to trade anyone at any time. They don't, they're not loyal. So they have a hard time signing free agents. This was terrible PR. No doubt Scarlett's deal called for any issues to be handled via private arbitration. But she filed this lawsuit and she picked specific claims to try and get around it just to embarrass Disney. That's, she really doesn't have a great chance. It's 50-50 really about how she navigates this or whether it gets forced.
The rap about whether she had, and the lawyers we talked to seem to think she has a decent shot.
Yeah, but it might get kicked back to arbitration, which is how all deals usually, but she did this to go public, right? She did this to make it known. And then Disney just walked right into the trap and issued this terrible statement. And she, her people have to be sitting there going, You just walked right into that trap.
Wait, no,
just,
but they didn't actually. I've talked to her people. They were upset.
I think they were upset, but from a PR standpoint, they're winning. Who's on Disney's side right now? Disney looks terrible right now. So I think from in the grand scheme of things, they've got to be sitting there going, "You guys look so bad. We have played this well. You have played this poorly." And to your point, if the main guys aren't on the same page, that's what happens. And you know, I think one of the other points in your piece is that Bob Iger knows how to deal with talent and Bob Chapek doesn't. And that's come across big time in this.
Yeah.
It's just they're losing so far from a PR standpoint. And
they've both been completely silent. We haven't heard from either of them.
Yeah. And I think I was going to say just long term. I just want to say one thing real quick, long term to my point about sports, like going forward, if you're a celebrity and you're negotiating a deal with Disney, you're going to think twice or you're going to push harder for certain things. You're going to, you know, negotiate harder and Disney's going to have to give in because they've got this bad rep right now and it's going to cost them in the long run.
It is going to cost them. My point was only that we had another piece on the wrap this week that points out that Disney's dealing with this just at the very moment when they are in a lame duck period in terms of having a head of communications, which is critically important. And Xenia Mouka, who's been there for 20 or 25 years, has announced that she's retiring. She put her name on this statement in calling Scarlett Johansson callous. She had her name on that statement last week. It felt like a very reactive and emotional and not well thought through reaction. Clearly, this has led to a lot of this PR mess we're talking about. So she is a lame duck. Although, you know, I have sources who are saying she's checked out. I've had sources call me since then and say she's not checked out. She's super engaged. Just her legacy is very important to her. But if that's the case, then boy, that's a big misstep by somebody who really, really knows better.
Yeah, she did not do good. That was not a good statement. Advantage, Scarlett. As always, we like to conclude this first segment with a little something we call Wax On, Wax Off, where we allow our founder and editor-in-chief, Sharon Waxman, the opportunity to speak out about something she's particularly into this week, her Wax On, and something she's a little more riled up about, upset about, angry even, her Wax Off. Sharon, as always, the floor is yours.
Why, thank you, Daniel. Well, this week, my Wax On is easy. Hats off and a big congratulations to Reese Witherspoon and her partner, Sarah Harden, for this huge deal, $900 million valuation of her company, Hello Sunshine. She reportedly got $120 million, talking about Reese, for a company that she and Sarah started 4 years ago. And, you know, Reese not only got a big check, but she's still a major equity stakeholder in her company, which she shares with her management team, which is all women. This is a company that is really focused on storytelling about women. And it's an amazing example of success in this era that we are now in, which, you know, we hope means a time of greater gender equity and more balance in the storytelling and the opportunities for women. So great job, Reese and Sarah. What a great example you create for other women by what you've built and achieved. Hats off to you guys. My wax off this week is I'm kind of torn. I can't decide if I'm super upset about these COVID numbers, which are horrible, and I keep seeing one story after another of some poor schmuck in a hospital on a ventilator and typing a text, I wish I had taken the vaccine. I should have taken the vaccine. Or their kid outside the ICU saying, he told me he really wished he took, or she really took the vaccine. And I just saw one this morning of a pregnant mom who died. They saved the baby. The mom died. She's got another kid. These are all cases that I'm citing that I've seen myself. Unvaccinated people. It is horrifying. This is unnecessary suffering and loss of life. On top of that, we are all rolling back in all the states these COVID rules that had been going away to not be masked all the time. Now we're having to wear masks indoors again. Even those of us here at the RAP, for example, we're all vaccinated. These breakthrough infections do seem to be getting worse. I'm trying to squint and pretend it's not true, but it does really seem like these breakthrough infections are getting worse, which is not the way we want to go. The other piece I was have to wax off about is like everybody is talking about the homelessness crisis in the city of LA. And I think that this is true in many cities, San Francisco, New York. It's tied, I think, to a rise in crime and just a general sense of chaos and desperation on the streets of our cities. Something has to be done about it. I know that Governor Newsom has carved out many billions of dollars from our budget surplus this year to address homelessness. And I pray it's going to get better, but it just seems to get worse and worse. That's my wax off.
Yeah, I think I'm glad to see it seems like more cities are playing hardball now and saying and imposing vaccine mandates on public places.
On the vaccine thing. Yeah.
And I think that's good. It's just basically like, if you don't want to get the vaccine, you can't participate in society.
I think the mask thing was like a
Band-Aid. We were like, you know, trying to, and now it's like, no, you don't get a vaccine. You don't get to play with the other kids. I love it.
I think that is the only way to go. If we're not going to actually pass a law saying you got to get the vaccine, then make it almost impossible to participate so that the vast majority of us who are sane. I mean, I want to leave a little wiggle room for people who are skeptics and not just.
Oh, there! I got to send you this thing today. Kirk Cousins, the quarterback of the Minnesota Vikings.
He's the guy who's not vaccinated.
He's not vaccinated. And today he was talking about if he goes into meeting rooms, he maybe would put up plexiglass around him. And he said he's willing to do whatever it takes.
He doesn't
want to get the vaccine. It's literally not whatever it. Oh God,
that's funny, isn't that? That's the guy who gets tested every day or whatever when he goes.
They all do. It's just ridiculous.
I think that if they get mandated, I think the vast majority of people will get vaccinated. Because they want to go to school. They want their kids to go to school. They want to go to restaurants. We had a post this morning on the RAP that had the Fox and Friends people arguing back and forth as to whether they should be recommending vaccines or not. And the woman in the middle, whoever she is, kept saying, well, I can't take my 5-year-old to a restaurant. And it was clear that all of them had been vaccinated, but only Steve Ducey was willing to go out on a limb and say, I really think our listeners, you should go out and get vaccinated. They're like, what are you telling listeners what to do? It's pretty funny.
It's crazy that that's a controversial opinion. Unbelievable. Yep. All right, that does it for this week's Wax On, Wax Off. When we come back, we have Sharon's interview with Ted Lasso star Hannah Weddingham. Stay tuned.
Yay.
Hannah Waddingham is an award-winning actress and singer who is currently grabbing everyone's attention as the bossy boss lady Rebecca in the Emmy-nominated comedy Ted Lasso, for which she also is nominated. She's also known for her performance as Septa Unella, the nun who shames Cersei Lannister in HBO's powerhouse series Game of Thrones, and she is widely known for her work in musical theater in London's West End. Welcome, Hannah.
Wow. That was nice. I feel like I've died.
Oh no, you're just new to us. And so it's always exciting when you meet somebody who has like a whole career behind them, but then they do something that they just like, they explode all of a sudden and they're like, oh, I just 20 years.
I know, it's crazy. It's crazy.
You're really an overnight, 20 year overnight success.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's how I feel. But I'm glad in a way. I'm glad that none of this really happened to this level in my 20s or 30s, because I'm not entirely sure I would have been ready for it or capable of playing the role, or, you know.
Well, it looks like the most fun ever. I mean, what a delight to be able to be kind of be part of, I'm projecting now, that it must be a delight to be part of a show that's so different. And I think what we're finding about Ted Lasso is that it really is, it is going to be an era-defining show in a way. A lot of people are talking about it as a new kind of approach to comedy and a character that's sincere. Are you hearing this?
Yes. I mean, I think we were acutely aware of that as soon as the first two episodes aired. The response was just immediate and thankful. Mm. And that's not something any of us are used to, really. We were all kind of taken aback. But then actually when you, I think you're so caught up in the doing of it, in the shooting the scenes, that you tend to go scene, 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 and you're just on it, all of us like on a very glamorous hamster's wheel, and hadn't had a second to check in with what the show might do to society. So once you see it all spliced together, all of us were a bit like, oh, it's a whole vibe.
Yeah. How did you get involved in the show?
The old school route. I went in and taped for it. And little unbeknownst to me, Brendan Hunt had a conversation, Coach Beard, for those people who don't know, right. He's one of our main writers and creators. Mm-hmm. And he had a conversation with a mutual friend of ours, an actor called Todd Stashwick. And they were saying, look, we're struggling to cast the part of Rebecca. And this guy said, well, who, you know, tell me things about Rebecca. And he said, well, she needs to be this and this and that. And to cut a long story short, Todd just went, well, that's Hannah Waddingham. And I was brought in and did my taping. And then didn't hear for a while, as you do. And then before I knew it, like on a Friday night, my manager in LA rang me and went, you need to clear your diary. You need to be in LA. Warner Brothers are flying you out to do a chemistry read with Jason on Monday. And I was like,
wow.
But my brain, because I'm always like this, I think it's healthy as an actor to just do a tape. And then I always tear up the script. And I don't revisit it. If it comes back to me, that's wonderful, but I don't hound my agents about it. And so I had forgotten what it was for.
Are you serious?
What's that for? And he went for Ted Lasso. And I was like, oh God, really? I literally was just like, and they went, yeah, do you want us to send you the script again?
Can I ask you a question? Well, I don't know if they gave you a whole script, if they just gave you sides for your character. Just for the character. So you didn't even know that much about the show then?
No. I just knew a smattering of the general vibe. I knew the general trajectory. And all I knew was that Rebecca was the owner of Richmond Football Club. Actually, it wasn't even particularly clear that it was Richmond, because then when I found out that it was filming like 40 minutes, half an hour, 40 minutes from my own house here, I was just like, what is going on that this has plopped in my lap?
Wow, that is destiny. By the way, where are you? In London? I never know where people are these days.
I'm in Surrey, which is where Richmond is.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
Lovely. Okay, so they flew you over, you cleared your calendar, you figured out what was the show you were actually a chemistry reading for, which is always good to know in advance.
The important thing for me as a theatre actor was I didn't want to know any of the figures of it all. I didn't want to know anything else. I just wanted to see, for my sake as well, if Jason and I had a natural, effortless chemistry, and we did.
Hmm. Did you know much about Jason Sudeikis?
Oh God, of course, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, of course, from Saturday Night Live and his movies and stuff. Yes, absolutely. Which is why when they said, "Oh, you need to go out and have this chemistry read," I was just like, and then they said Jason Sudeikis, and I was like, okay.
Isn't it more fair to call it an anti-chemistry read? Because wasn't the whole point to be that you hate it, that you instinctively hate him?
I know what you mean, but no, I think you have to have a chemistry that the viewer can see through the toxicity to the fact that they are ultimately soulmates in whatever form. Mm-hmm. You have to have that understanding and that X Factor thing together.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's two people who are meant to hate each other or love each other or somewhere in between, you have to have something that people want right. to watch and they can't quite put their finger on why.
Yes, well, that's absolutely true. And just watching him break you down slowly over yeah. the season, right, is yeah. so delicious.
With kindness, which she's never had in her life.
Okay, I need to ask you this because I put it out in the teaser. Did you actually eat those cookies every single day? On set?
Every single, not only every single day.
Every single take.
To the point where our props department were like, Han, you don't have to start a new one every time. And I'm like, I do, because she does.
Because continuity.
Well, yeah, but just because, you know, I decided that she should be an emotional eater and that became her crutch. So I just kind of went with it. And I've continued it in season two when nobody asked me to either.
That's interesting. I felt like I really understood Rebecca's character. I still feel like I really do.
Good.
As, you know, as a woman who has to present a certain image to the world, and that you hold on to that, and it becomes some caricature that you don't even recognize of yourself at a certain point, but you've lost control of it because it's the armor you have to wear.
It's the mask. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The exhausting mask.
Exhausting is a great word for it. Did you, how'd you prepare at all? Or is this based on, say, I want to say Margaret Thatcher, but I think she really was, that armor was really her. But I don't know, who did you draw from?
Well, in terms of being a football club owner, being a businesswoman thrown into essentially a man's world, I would say Karen Brady in terms of the football, in terms of...
I don't actually know who that is, so I'm just saying yes, like I knew this.
Football club owner here. Okay. And doesn't shy away from still being absolutely as feminine as you like, wearing skirts, wearing heels, the clothes are immaculate. I also wanted to take that, which I think is important. If I don't want to let people in, I find more makeup goes on and more immaculate the clothes are. And yes. it's like you said, yes. it's like armor, Sharon. It's a don't F with me. I'm going to put up an absolutely flawless, immaculate barrier, and you are not going to question whether I'm all right or not. I'm so not all right that I'm presenting somebody who is absolutely all right so that you don't even go there.
Yeah, exactly. But okay, so that's one real life person. Were there any other either literary characters?
There was one other person, a friend of mine who shall remain nameless, who always presents that as well. But I also, and I never shy away from saying it, I also drew on my own life with not pleasant, previously verbally abusive relationship. And so I felt like I knew who Rebecca was as soon as the Rupert element came in, which of course is the main thrust for her. Mm-hmm. As soon as the Rupert element came in person, in the brilliant form of Anthony Head, who made it so easy for me because we had great chemistry in the way that you don't want, in terms of you see us on camera and he is so devastatingly handsome and so utterly charming. It was easy for me to imagine that you would be in love with him, but that he had wronged you, but you didn't know what to do with your love for him. He just Yes. brought a brilliant element to the show. Mm-hmm. So I drew on my own experience of having to keep a brave face, having to be a single mom when it's not something, as any of us who go through that, any of us thought was going to be your life. And keeping that thing of, you know, being an actress who's working, but you go home and you struggle the same as the next woman or the same as the next man who's by themselves with a child. So it was partly drawing on this person, that person, and my own experience to try and it didn't take much for Rebecca and her plight to ripple through my bloodstream. It just felt like the right fit.
Wow. Well, I'm sorry you've gone through that in your own life.
But I'm sure plenty of us have. I'm all right now, but it almost makes me feel like it's been useful catharsis. Who knew that this show would be of benefit in some way like that?
Yeah. And that you could really use it to help you grow as an actress.
And also to realize that it's all right to, there's a big thing with Rebecca of accepting, finally understanding that you can accept other people's help. And I love that you see that. Mm-hmm. We said about Ted coming out with kindness, but also when Keely comes in. And because Juno Temple and I fell in love with each other so immediately, that was easy as well. So I feel like I've been afforded the luxury of the most amazing scene partners in forms of Jason and Jeremy Swift as Higgins and Juno and Anthony Head. When you are greeted with such excellence, it would be crazy if you didn't bounce off that excellence.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's fun for us also in America who are watching this, because most of the actors are not well known to us except for Jason. So it's really kind of a wonderful surprise, and it's fun to discover, you know, these great actors who you didn't really know previously. And that's really part of the fun of the show.
Who, like you say, like me, have had 20 odd years of experience doing other things.
Yeah, exactly. I have a lot of other questions about Ted Lasso, but I wanted to make sure that we made some time to talk a bit about Game of Thrones. And specifically, I wanted to ask you, first of all, I didn't realize until I did a bit of research on you that was you.
Good.
You couldn't, I mean, completely unrecognizable, right? You're like this hot woman in Ted Lasso and like this very austere and completely covered up, scary.
You can say it. I look like I've been dug up. I mean, I look like every bad period pain on one day, all in one day, and looking horrendous with it.
Well, yeah. So for those who don't remember, because Game of Thrones was endless and had only 8,000 characters, Hannah plays the nun who sort of tortures Cersei Lannister, walks her through the town at this very famous shame scene, and then meets a terrible end when Cersei takes her revenge on your character.
Yeah.
Is that about right, pretty much?
Yeah, wineboarded to death.
Yeah, waterboarded to death.
Our producers are always like, well, you're lucky it was wine and not water. And you could have like a lick around your face.
There's many cringy memories like around that. I am a huge, huge, crazy fan of Game of Thrones, like so many of us. But I did want to ask you about it because I came across a very interesting interview that you gave earlier this year about what some of the mental health consequences to you were of playing that character and doing those scenes in particular. And I raise it not just because we're talking quite a lot about mental health. Well, we just wrote a big piece about sort of the intersection between what sports high level athletes like Naomi Osaka and Simone Biles are talking about and leading a discussion about in our society. And that I do think that intersects with many of the pressures that celebrities go through. And then just this past week, Kit Harington talked about how he needed to take care of his mental health after the end of Game of Thrones. And it was not like some remote thing. It was directly connected to what he had to put out there as an actor.
No doubt.
So if you feel comfortable, I'd just love for you to share a bit about how it impacted you, and then how did you take care of yourself?
I would say, well, for a start, and I know that the producers wouldn't mind me saying this, for a start, it wasn't meant to be waterboarding in the first place. It was meant to be a rape scene. But they had so many complaints about the previous rape in season 5 of Sansa that they decided to change it to waterboarding. They weren't to know that that I was not great with water, and that you know, it's quite full on. But having said that, the thing that I was very much making a point about a few months ago when I talked about this was that I knew that at no point were they going to do anything long-lasting or sinister or disturbing to me. I knew that they were still looking after me, and I would 100% do it again in a heartbeat, because there are some moments, and I've actually discussed it with a couple of the guys from Throne since, there are some moments where you need to give of yourself, even if it makes you uncomfortable. And would I have wanted to be waterboarded? Absolutely not. Would I have wanted to be lying on a wooden table with actual real leather straps round me being waterboarded for several hours? Absolutely not. Does it look amazing on camera? Does it make the audience feel uncomfortable? Yes, and I would do it again because of that. So you have to make a decision. The individual has to make a decision whether you can cope with something like that and then what you do after it. And I don't mind saying, like Kit has, that I found it quite claustrophobic, where I have never had any claustrophobia before. And I went and had a bit of hypnotherapy afterwards. My biggest thing was that as a singer, I had been screaming so much by choice, because it's what I felt it required. And the certain timbre of screaming that it required because of how I had projected the shame stuff. My voice was really shot after it. So I went and I had some vocal therapy after it. And like I say, I would happily do it all again, because sometimes you do have to uncomfortably give of yourself. Do I think any less of the producers? Absolutely not. I was out having drinks with them two nights ago. So I don't want it to be seen as, oh my God, that this program has, you know, given people issues and all the rest of it, because that's just not true.
Well, do you think that the mental health, mental safety of actors who are pushed very far in their roles, and I always have Heath Ledger in the back of my mind.
No, I think you have to speak up. If you don't feel comfortable with something, you speak up, and they will always listen. And if they don't listen, that's when it becomes a problem. But if they do listen, as they should, then, you know, it's up to the individual, I think, to speak up.
Well, but I mean, actors who, such as yourself and such as Kid, who are very dedicated, might not know in the moment of how it's impacting you, you know, because you're just deeply committed to the work.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this is an issue that there's obviously not a straight answer to it and a simple answer to it, but
it's not an issue for me, is all I can say.
Yeah. Yeah. But I appreciate
people's mental health must always be nurtured first and foremost, but as an individual, I've never had a moment where I felt like my mental health wasn't being looked after.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's important to know. I mean, I think it's a new issue. It's a fairly new issue that people are prepared to even talk about these things.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And it should be. And I hope it will continue thusly, that it is more at the forefront of how producers conduct themselves, because, you know, some are not mindful of that, but I've been very lucky so far that I haven't felt scarred by it to the point where I wouldn't do something again. I said in an interview that, you know, it was the worst day of my life other than childbirth. Yes, it was. In that moment, that experience was really unpleasant. And Lena would say the same. It was unpleasant for her to be doing it. Am I scarred for life? Absolutely not. And would I do it again? 100%.
That's dedication.
It is, but I come from theatre, and you are. You don't get into these things to just have all the fluffy fluffies all the time. I personally like to give of myself. Mm. So
that's great. Well, thank you for sharing, Hannah. It's such a pleasure to meet you. We're just loving the second season of Ted Lasso.
Good.
And I presume at some point you and Jason fall in love. Is that crazy? I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. I don't. That
okay.
Hasn't been.
All right. Maybe that was. This is the entire point of the whole thing. But anyway, it's really fun to watch the evolution of your character.
The thank you.
Is absolutely a breath of fresh air, and you are a breath of fresh air in it. So thanks so much for joining us.
All right, thank you.
Yes, and good luck at the Emmys.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
And that is it for this week's episode of The Wrap-Up. Thank you to all of our listeners. And remember to please follow or subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcast. Be sure to rate and review us and let us know what you think of the pod. See you next time.